I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
I don't know about you, I could listen to that all night long. You cannot not move to those sounds of the sax, to Don't You Know, Pump It Up. The Whites are, of course, going up. I'm not going to have anybody else say anything different. 10 points clear. 10 points clear of third place in the championship. And yes, the 7-game winning run did come to an end last week against Cardiff. However, it is still 11 games unbeaten in the Championship. 3-0 up against the Bluebirds last week. A Bluebirds, by the way, who were down to 10 men. But hey, when you pull off a backheel volley type of through ball like Lee Tomlin did for Glatzel's equaliser, sometimes you just have to accept it. This is the Leeds United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with John McKenzie, as always, the J-Man, the JJ Man, the J&M, the Johnny Mac from All Stats Aren't We. Hi, John.
Yo, yo, yo.
There we go. Boom sound. How are we?
Yeah, good. A little bit rushed, but you know.
Rushed and flustered. Yeah, it's Christmas time.
Getting to Christmas.
It is the festive time.
I've got you a stat.
You've got me an opening stat.
After telling you that I didn't have an opening stat, I've dug one.
Amazing.
This is what we do. So I've got a list here of progressive passes and runs per 90 minutes.
Of course you have.
So that's basically players who progress the ball by passing and running the most in the championship.
Is that like dribblers or people who are passing it and then moving?
Dribblers and passing, so both. So okay. The two stats added together.
Okay.
So do you want to have a guess for anyone in this list?
The most progressive player in Leeds,
in the championship. So I've got the list of everyone in the championship. It's like 20 players in here. So.
Oh, crikey. I'm going to say, well, he hasn't played as many. I was going to say Costa would be high up the list, but I would say he's probably not had enough minutes to be high enough up that list. What about Matty Phillips?
Matty Phillips is not on this list as far as I can see.
Not even on the list?
There are, however, two. There's two Leeds players in the top five. There's two West Brom players in the top five. And there's a Brentford player in the top five. We'll go with the top five just so I'd have to.
Okay. The Brentford player, I would imagine, would be, again, didn't start the season, but I still say his stats are up there. Benrahma
is right. So Benrahma is second, and Benrahma's basically got progressive passes per 90 and progressive runs per 90 comes in at just under six. There's a player ahead of him, a Leeds player, who is just over eight. So like, yeah, you know, over two progressive passes and runs per 90 above the rest of the field. So like way out ahead, you can see that on the thing.
Wow, I can see that.
Do you want to have a guess?
Please.
Pablo Hernandez. So Pablo Hernandez is essentially Messi in the championship in terms of getting the ball into, moving the ball down the field, essentially. The other players in that top five are Mateus Klich is third. He's just behind Benrahma, just under six. Then Mateus Pereira and Grady Diangana. And those two. So that makes up the top five. So Leeds have got two players in the top five. West Brom have got two players in the top five. And both of those teams are in the top two in the Championship. So it's a pretty good indicator for decent players. So
that is where, my friend, these stats do not lie.
Yeah.
Do they?
No.
They certainly don't lie. Right, let's talk about the game last week. Patrick Bamford, of course, said he was distraught after throwing away a 3-goal lead. We speak about trusting the process a lot on this show. Hey, every so often, I think you've just got to have one. You've got to give it to an opposing team, or you've got to say, do you know what? That's our one for the season. I think that happened last Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with the sort of general principle of that, that, you know, every once in a while there's going to be a result that doesn't go your way. It's not often going to happen that you're 3-0 up and that happens. So I think for me, you know, Josh and I recorded a podcast this week and we talked about it, and then everyone else has been talking about it in the Leeds media. So it's one of those things now where, you know, you have quite a gut emotional response to it when it happens, and you're just frustrated and annoyed. But looking back on it now... and trying to, I've watched the game since. Josh has watched the game since and written a piece on our Medium. So if you're interested in that, and that's a very good piece because he sort of breaks down what happened from the first goal that Cardiff scored when it going in, and then what happens afterwards. And in many respects, we were in pretty much in total control until that second goal went in, and that's when things went to pot a little bit. But they didn't score the second goal until 86 minutes. So,
and a pass out of nothing. Incredible piece of play.
All of their goals yeah. really were out of nowhere. Now, that's not to say that you can't point to things that Leeds did where they went wrong, but I think why this is such an outlier is because you don't expect the probability to go that way. You expect someone to mess up every time there's a goal, but you don't expect to have three chances that go in, sort of very, very low probability chances going in that kind of game, especially when you're in that sort of position. So it's I think it's just one of those ones. The thing that worries me is the fact that when it comes to the sort of psychological fragility that we saw at the end of last season, I think, you know, you can see why that kind of thing would happen, because the pressure is mounted up. It's ramped right up. You've got to win four games to get in the Premier League. You end up taking just the 1 point. You can understand why that would happen, especially with a fairly inexperienced squad, a lot of players who are playing above their level probably, and not used to that. What worries me about this is we were potentially 13 points clear of third place in second, or in first it would have been, but we were potentially 13 points clear of third place. We were 3 goals up. And then to concede 2 goals and that just then mean that their heads go is just a little bit worrying to me, because it's not as though the pressure is almost worthy in that scenario. It's more that sort of mental fragility where you think, oh, you know, here you go, this is happening again, rather than, look, we're 3-0 up for a reason, we control the game, we know what we have to do, let's just get this game through to the end. So for me, that's the most worrying aspect of it. We could break down each of the goals and say, you know, Costa should probably have pushed out for the second one, but, you know, there's mitigating factors. And you just, like, it's very, what frustrates me, I think, about a lot of these responses, it's very easy to point at something and say, oh, look, Costa should be closing down the man. If he closes down the man, they might not get as much time on the ball, might not get the ball into Morrison quite so easily. Ben White should have been tighter to his man, shouldn't have lost him. The thing is you just don't expect those sorts of things to... There's so many other variables in there that people just ignore and think, well, you know, it's sort of nailed on once you've not closed it down. Like, there's so many things that could have gone wrong. The cross might not have been as good. Ben White might not have lost his man. And it's just the aggregation of all those things happening at once. It's just so low that I think we come out of those kind of games and we over-explain them because we think, well, there must be a reason why it happened, when I think it's just, you know, it's just the way it goes sometimes. Like you said, it's the way it goes. It's just so low probability, and that's the frustrating thing for us, because we talk about trusting the process and the process doesn't ever really seem to trust us back.
Well, the man who created the process in Marcelo Bielsa, I know he's a curious being, right? I get that Bielsa is the way that Bielsa is and we wouldn't change him for the world. But in the second half of that game, he seemed almost statuesque. And I know that, you know, he was sitting on his little seat, which he does occasionally, but it was like, and listen, I was in the crowd. I didn't see a camera on Bielsa for 45 minutes straight, but he did seem to not move from that position and did speak out after the game as well and said, you know, I got some things wrong. I knew what Cardiff's strengths were and I didn't resolve it. And I know he alluded to set pieces and he said, you know, we probably should have dealt with that better. That was quite unlike Bielsa for me, because normally he does rectify it.
Yeah, I think for me, the only really poor piece of game management was probably bringing on Pascal Struick, who's, I think that might even have been his debut in the league at least. And he was, I mean, he was caught out of position for the third goal, but you how do you not get caught out of position when you say, as you say, Tomlin sort of pulls off a sort of weird back heel where he just gets the ball to bounce through perfectly for Glatzel. That was maybe interesting. I think as well they must have decided to make that substitution before the second goal goes in. The second goal goes in and they think, oh, you know, we'll go with it anyway. But apart from that, you know, I think a lot of people like to blame Bielsa when this kind of thing happens. And I think a lot of it has to do with the players on the pitch. There's a sense in which you can't blame. He can't micromanage everything. There's a certain amount of sense in which he prepares them for the game and then they have to go out and do it, which is why I don't think this idea of sort of having a manager on the sidelines just shouting at everyone, I don't think necessarily, because you want your players to be able to think for themselves, and I think that's a lot of what his, well, maybe it's not even thinking for yourself, but you want your players to react the way that they have to react, and a lot of his training methods are based around that idea that you just automatically do things. So the idea that he could be like telling them to calm down or whatever from the sidelines, I don't know. But again, it's I think he'll blame himself probably, because he's very good at making his players feel as though that he wants to avoid negativities creeping in. So he'll happily say, you know, I made mistakes, I should have changed things up, but it doesn't stop it from just being horrendously unlucky all the same. So
I think a classic example, by the way, as well, of just seeing a game on paper or seeing the result is that I came in and did the League One and Two fan show, which I do every Saturday evening, and the score is on before me, so I come on and speak to the guys from the score going through the results. And they were doing the Championship post-match fan show, and they were like, Leeds threw away a three goalie. They were down to 10 men, Cardiff. And you think, well, yeah, but Sean Morrison got sent off on what, 86 minutes? Yeah. They scored on 88 minutes.
Yeah, 87.
87, 88.
So we had a free kick into the box, and then the goalkeeper kicked it down the field and they scored from it.
So it's not a case of Leeds not being able to adjust to the fact that Cardiff were down to 10 men, because it was, like you said, it was in such quick succession. It didn't really make a difference at that time.
I mean, there's questions about what we did from that free kick. But again, it's sort of like really minuscule, petty things. So the ball was kicked in, came out again, came to click. He tried to do is whip it into the top corner that we've seen, and it goes straight to the goalkeeper. You know, or it went out for a goal kick, I can't remember. But that's the thing is, you know, you don't you can point to that and say, oh, this is terrible game management, they should have played the ball back, they should have kept possession, but they've been keeping possession since the first goal has gone in pretty well, and you just don't expect anything like that to happen, really. So I think it's just frustrating more than anything.
Yep, it is indeed. But like we said, still 11 games unbeaten as things stand. Leeds on 47 points, 10 points ahead of Preston on 37. Of course, the two meet during the festive fixture pile-up. Two teams not really scoring any goals in the Championship, or struggling to find the net in the Championship this season. Middlesbrough and Stoke, they are facing off at the Riverside this evening. And it's 0-0. Just what you would expect. Middlesbrough with a corner, and no, straight into Jack Butland's arms. We'll give you all the updates on that as the game goes on throughout the course of the next 60 minutes or so. This is the Leeds United Fan Show. We'll be back in a second.
Love Sport.
It's the Leeds United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? As we are every Friday evening at 8 p.m. However, just a quick note, a quick reminder that this is it for 2019. This is it for the year in the Leeds United Fan Show. We're not going anywhere. We'll be back next year as we kick proceedings off again. But you've got about a two-week break, but then we'll be back rolling on it as Leeds no doubt will have extended their run or their lead ahead of third place or second place even. Maybe they'll be flying high ahead of West Brom at the top of the Championship when we return.
I've got a fun stat for you here.
Brilliant, mate. We're starting with a second opening stat.
The year 2000.
Yep.
Leeds were top of the league.
Yep.
The year 2010. Mm-hmm. Leeds were top of the league, so will Leeds be top of the league in 2020?
As in the, so Leeds were top of the league
when the millennium turned. Leeds were top of the league. They were top of the Premier League,
of course.
Will it be the League One in 2010, and then 2020 we could be top of the Championship.
What a beautiful thing.
Hmm.
At the end of each season, though, obviously in 2000, didn't go on to win the Premier League. In 2010...
Yeah, I should know this, shouldn't I? Is that the season we went up from?
It's a good question. We'll have a look at that.
That's probably no. We didn't go up top though, did we? When we went up, we went up in automatic position in second. So there you go.
There you go. Interesting. Well,
I'll quickly search that.
Do search that. Do search that right now. See, we lie deeper within the stats here. The easy basic ones, we fall by the wayside on.
I'm not very good on the history.
Mm.
So we'll see.
Okay. Well, listen. It is not only the end of 2019, it is the end of the decade, of course, going in to 2020. Now, when we get the answer from 2010 in terms of where Leeds were this time nearly 10 years ago to where they are now, I mean, what's quite interesting, and I waited to tell you this because when I was thinking about this earlier and I said, OK, well, the players who have played for Leeds, it occurred to me that I still think of Leeds as, you know, that Premier League side from when the Premier League first started in 1992. And it is incredible to think that it's been since 2004. I know this is nothing new, but that it's been, you know, 15 years since the club were in the Premier League. And I suddenly started thinking of players that were in the Leeds side when they fell out of the Premier League and then those early seasons in the Championship and League One, etc., etc. And I was like, that's not even in the last decade. It's been so long and so many players have come through the doors of Elland Road. But in terms of the last 10 years, John, we are going to pilfer through a whole load of players now and see if we can come up with a team of the decade.
Mm, yeah. 2010, it was the season that we were promoted, but we were promoted in second place, so we dropped down.
There we go.
Yeah, so do you want to just run through in position order? Goalkeeper, I know you're a goalkeeping expert yourself, so I'll let you decide between these three. I've got three here.
Okay.
I've got Kasper Schmeichel, Rob Green and Kiko Kassir.
Mm. Okay, well,
it's hard, isn't it? Because like Kasper Schmeichel went on to be better. Rob Green was at the end of his career, as is Kiko, right?
So Kasper just had the 1 year at Leeds, didn't he?
It wasn't long. It was maybe
just the one season. I think he came in and obviously then moved on to Leicester. I don't think that Kasper can be given the title of the best of a team of the decade for Leeds. I don't think so. I think it has to go with either Robert Green or Kiko Kassir. So I'm gonna plump for Green. I'm gonna go Robert Green
because again, I guess Kiko's only really had a season in a bit, but yeah.
I just personally, I feel that he is a better goalkeeper than Kiko Kassir, and I know Kiko has done. He's been erratic in his time at Leeds. It's fair to say. So I'm going to plump for Robert Green, especially in light of what we don't exactly know what's going to happen in January as well. So for me, Robert Green.
Rob Green was only there for a year as well,
which goes against my logic with regards to Kasper Schmeichel. I thought he was there for longer. Okay,
I've
only
got
there
2016,
for
17. He played 46 games, whereas I think Schmeichel only played 37, so 9 games in it. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's an interesting one because looking back, I remember Kasper Schmeichel being one of our brighter players, I think, of that period. That was a good period for Leeds, but I do remember him fondly, whereas I don't remember Rob Green quite so fondly. But I guess with Rob Green, we had the we had that season with Gary Monk, and it was a great season. But I remember Green started off quite badly at his time at Leeds.
Yeah, he had a bit of stick on Twitter,
because
I remember.
He'd not been playing, right? And I think did he arrive in January the previous season then? Is that why you're thinking he was there a bit longer? Because I remember he was not playing and was just sort of mooching around, like going shopping with his wife, and ended up just signing for Leeds for quite a small contract. I think it was not a huge wage bill that he was on. And as a result of that, he was quite rusty when he started off. But I think he grew into that season and was quite good.
I do recall, I'm sure he made a decent penalty save in one particular game. I remember it was like a really big game that he made a penalty save, but perhaps that's standing out for me. I don't think he was a January signing. I think he came in the summer.
Okay. He made a mistake and someone, he fumbled it and someone headed it in. Who was it? Dwight Gayle or someone?
It was Dwight Gayle. I was hoping you wouldn't remember that because as I said, Robert Green, I did think, do you know what? Actually, maybe not Robert Green, but I'd already committed. So
okay. I think it's a fine line, isn't it, between the two of them? I think Kasper was he was quite inexperienced at that point, whereas Rob Green was sort of the other end. So you probably got an upside from one that you didn't get from the other.
Mm.
But we should move on. Centre backs, I've got quite a few listed down. I've got Liam Cooper, Ben White, again, that's a one season wonder for you. But Pontus Janssen was obviously important. I've got Kyle Bartley as well, and then honourable mentions for Paddy Kisnorbo and Tom Lees. But I mean, we're scraping at the barrel a little bit there. If it was my decision, I think I would go. I think Cooper and White is the best partnership we've had in this decade. But Janssen and Bartley were a very important partnership for one season as well. So you could go either of those two. But I think White is the player with the biggest ceiling out of all of those players. But obviously he's right at the beginning of his career. Liam Cooper, I think, has to have an honourable mention just because he's come from almost nowhere. And I mean, he was being called League One Liam when he was first at the club. And he's been absolutely exceptional for us. So I would go Liam Cooper and Ben White for my centre-back pairing.
See, now the whole one season theory that I had before, I don't think that applies here because they've made such an impact. I don't think either Kasper Schmeichel nor Robert Green, to be fair, made much of an impact. I think Ben White clearly has. And you can see, like you said, the ceiling, he's got the highest, 100%. I'm surprised you didn't go for Janssen over Cooper. I know you're talking about, I mean, you're looking at it in terms of a partnership, aren't you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you could easily go with Cooper Janssen as well as a partnership from last season. But yeah, I just think that Ben White and Liam Cooper so embody this team that we have now and the way that they play. And there's there was so much concern about Janssen leaving. And that has just been, we've not even really talked about it this season. We've not really worried about our centre-backs at all, apart from when Berardi's coming in. And I think that's just a real testament to just how good Ben White has been. Because, people would have been ready to say, well, you know, we shouldn't have got rid of Janssen. This is terrible. Mm-hmm. And I remember the interview with his mum in The Athletic where she said, oh, you know, we're a little bit nervous because he's still not made a mistake yet, but we know it's going to happen at some point. We're midway through the season and it's not happened yet. So it really is a testament to how good he is. So I, as a result of that, just the fact that he's come in, he's played from the beginning in a system that swallows people up. Like it's taken Helder Costa this long to get used to the system as a wide player, which is probably one of the easiest roles to play in this system. Ben White's come straight in and fit into that. So I think for me, that's why I've included him and Cooper, because I think those two really embody the system. I don't think Janssen ever really quite worked in the system, but he was obviously a great what's the phrase, servant to the club.
He was
an important player for us. He scored a lot of important goals even. But in terms of the system, now it feels as though it feels natural to have those two.
Okay, what formation are we going with here, by the way?
I'm going with the 4-1-4-1.
Of course.
Just because it gives you the back four, and it gives you a defensive midfielder, and then the possibility of an 8 and a 10. So I'm just going to go for an 8 and a 10 in the two central midfield positions, and a left wing, right wing, and a striker.
Okay.
It's just a little bit, it makes a little bit more sense, I think. But you okay with that?
I'm absolutely fine with that. Please, can we move to right back?
Yeah, right back. We really struggle in the fullback areas. I've got Sam Byram as an option and Luke Ayling as an option. Again, it's really hard to do this because there's so much recency bias in this kind of
it's hard
process.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
especially because you've got one of the best teams that you've had in a long time past couple of years.
Yeah, and I think probably the team of the decade is probably, with a few, like, you bring in maybe other players, but you could feasibly argue, I think, the current team, the strongest team we feel this season, is the team of the decade. But I think Byram was again he was a really useful player in a period where we didn't have many useful players, and he pretty much carried the team for one season, or at least made them interesting to watch.
What I think is interesting about Byram, because you talk about Ben White and you talk about the ceiling, he's got the biggest ceiling at the time. You probably would have said the same about Sam Byram. Now, I know he's playing in the Premier League at the moment with Norwich, but he's not reached the heights, right, that he promised when he started at Leeds.
No, and again, this is a throwback, I think, to what I said before, which is, you know, Leeds have had such a weird history that in the last decade we've been relegated from the Championship. We've had a season where we didn't go up in League One. Then we were promoted from League One, and then we've sort of hovered around in the Championship. So it means we've just had a real gamut of abilities in the team. And the problem is that when you're thinking about a team of the decade, you're always going to be like, oh well, I know I have this sort of emotional response to this name because he was probably the best player in the team at that time. But if you look at that player now compared to the team that we have, you kind of wonder, well, would they fit in? Even with the fullback thing, what I found interesting is that we are sort of on the other side. I've literally just got Charlie Taylor because I can't really think of anyone else who played there. and the issue there is that we've got two very sort of... Sam Byram and Charlie Taylor feel like fullbacks who could have played maybe as wide players in other systems. Whereas we've now got two potential fullbacks who are actually wide players in other systems who've dropped back into fullback positions. And I find that's like a real, again, that's a real testament to the way that we play now, that our best players in fullback positions are players who've been pushed back from more attacking positions than both Byram and Taylor, who I think actually were a little bit more agricultural than both Alioski and Dallas. Mm. I mean, for example, Charlie Taylor people love, but I mean, with Charlie Taylor, he sort of lumbered down to the byline and floated a ball in and hoped Chris would head it in, and that was basically one of our modes of attacking during the Gary Monk season, where we nearly got to the playoffs. So I think, at a risk of like ending up playing our current team, I'll take Sam Byram, but I don't think Sam Byram would function, or at least he wouldn't be able to come into this system immediately as well as someone like Luke Ayling, and like the very fact that Luke Ayling is a centre back. Well, played basically the right-sided centre-back in a back three when he was at Bristol City, and he's now sort of comfortably a right-back. Again, a testament to the way that Bielsa has moulded this team, although I suppose Ayling did play there as a under Monk as well. So I think I'll go with Byram and Taylor just to mix it up, but I think probably Luke Ayling has probably had the better games in a lead shirt.
Okay, let's move on to midfield. We are slightly pressed for time. I'm not going to lie to you. You've thoroughly enjoyed this, haven't you? I've given you this task. Well, I'll tell you what, you've relished it.
Well, we could go into the...
I'll tell you what.
We've got only a few listener questions, so...
Okay, we'll tell you what, we'll do that. So we've got the goalkeeper in the back four. Moving on to the midfield and attack. We'll bring you the rest here on the Leeds United Fan Show on Love Sport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Love Sport.
It's the Leeds United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? And we are rifling through John's team of the decade here. Of course, it is coming to an end this decade. I was having this debate earlier, John. The tens, the teenies?
Oh, I don't know. I get confused by when the decade starts and when it ends, right?
Aren't you a Cambridge graduate?
Yeah, but there's no year zero, right? It goes from 1 AD to 1 BC to 1 AD.
Right.
So the first year of the decade originally is the year one.
Right.
So that means surely 2020 is the last year of the previous decade.
So Josh has written on here the first year. I'm completely confused. I've gone from mimicking you being a Cambridge graduate, and now you've just spoken me into not knowing a clue what you're saying. No, for me, the decade is January the 1st, 2020, okay, through to December 31st. 2029.
Well, if it's good enough for you, Matt, it's good enough for
Thank
me.
Thank you.
We'll,
good.
We'll go with that.
1 AD is the first year, apparently. That's what I'm hearing in my ear now from our producer. 1 AD is the first year. 10 AD is the 10th year. Does that all make sense? Yeah? Good. We'll move on to the midfield in our team of the decade. Just talking about years. We have a goalkeeper in a back four, so we've now got our 1-4-1 to finish.
Yeah, so Calvin Phillips, central defensive midfielder.
Shocker. But it has to be.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't really think of anyone else in that position. We've had some terrible players in that position, really. I don't know. Liam Bridcut, I had a soft spot for, but Again, he was like Phillips light. He was never quite the level of Phillips. And again, it was in a team where, you know, he was just expected to be a destroyer. He wasn't. He didn't have both the passing and the break up side of his play. So I don't think anyone's going to argue with this. So I'll go with him. Centre midfield, I've got a few options. I've got Lewis Cook, Johnny Howson, Adam Forshaw, and Mateus Klik.
Johnny Howson, for me,
I put him in because I'm scared of not putting... Not in the team, no. I put him in this list because I'm scared of people saying, Johnny was great for us.
Right, in case you get the backlash.
That's a good Leeds accent.
Yeah, I like it. It's good, mate. I like Johnny Howson, and Johnny Howson is a good footballer. But for me, without doing the whole Andy Townsend, for me, I just feel that I don't feel like he impacts a game enough. And perhaps I'm judging him on his time in the top flight, maybe. I don't feel like he properly impacted games enough. He was very good for Leeds. He was okay for Norwich, okay for Middlesbrough, I think. I just don't think that he was influencing games enough to be in a team of the decade.
Yeah, I do agree. I would say that, again, Adam Forshaw and Mateus Klik are in the current team. I think Lewis Cook was brilliant for us. Like he was bossing the midfield for Leeds at the age of 17. And it's just been a disappointment that he's never really lived up to the expectations we had of him. Obviously, he won the under-20s World Cup that he was captained England for. So I think it's only a matter of time before he does sort of break into maybe a bigger side. But he was just incredible, and he was a bright spark in a very dark period as well. So I've gone with Lewis Cook as the other central midfielder. And then I've gone for a 10 as well, so I've got a few options here. Samu Saiz, Pablo Hernandez, Ross McCormack, Alex Moa. We could argue about whether or not Pablo is a 10 or a wide player. He's a wide player now, but I think he was more of a 10 in his career. Certainly has the guile and the ability to be a number 10, although, yeah, maybe not so much anymore. I've got to get Pablo Hernandez in there, so I'm going to go with him. Samu, I think, should have a memorable note, just honourable mention, I should say. He was a very bright, again, another bright spark in a team that was just a dearth of creativity. I've got that word the right word. Dearth, I always think, is like loads, but it's not. It's
no,
not
dearth
very much,
is the opposite.
Dearth of
yeah.
creativity, that's great. I put Ross McCormack in there. He's probably more of a striker, but he could play as a 10 as well. Oh, sorry, I've not put him in. I've just got him down as an option. And Alex Moa as well. Probably not quite so good as the other two. So I'm going to go with Pablo here. But that leaves me problems on the right wing because I can only think of Helder Costa. I guess maybe Snodgrass is an option on the right wing as well. He played there a bit. I've also got him on the left wing. I'm not a huge fan of Snodgrass.
I thought that he was a shoo-in for this.
Really?
Well, yeah, I really did. I really thought you were going to say, yeah, Snodgrass, definitely.
I mean, if I was to bring in Snodgrass, then I guess I would put Hernandez as... I've got Hernandez as a 10. Snodgrass, I think, again, was probably too agricultural for me. Like, he was a lot of heart and a lot of effort. And, you know, he has, like, that weird way of playing football where he doesn't look like he's a very good footballer, but he's surprisingly productive. But I don't know. I have memories of watching him just sort of, like, ploughing up and down on one or other of the wings for Leeds and just sort of like flinging himself after the ball.
But at the time, was he not hugely rated at the time, which is why he got the move to Norwich?
Yeah, I mean, he was obviously rated. But I don't think there's any... It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because Costa's only really starting to show us what his upside is at the moment. But I think it's just clear that Costa's a better player. I think that's what's holding me back from like putting Snodgrass in. But then it comes down to what criteria do we have for determining who should be in a team of the decade? Should it be this player did more for Leeds than the other player? In which case, it probably is Snodgrass. But because we're going to talk about Beckford as well, obviously, and Beckford was barely there in the 2010s. Yeah. You know, the weird thing for Beckford is that actually did a huge amount for Leeds. Just most of it was before the 2010s. But I think that Costa will go on and be quite a big player for us in the future. So I've gone with Costa on the right, and then I've gone Max Gradle on the left, pushing out Jack Harrison. So Jack Harrison is obviously an option. Again, in the wide areas, for some reason, we just have a real struggle trying to get to fit people in. You're struggling with the formation.
No, I'm not. I'm getting, because I haven't got much space on my piece of paper here.
Well, there's only one more person.
I know.
I know.
I was just making sure I had that bit right.
Okay. Yeah. So I've gone with Costa on the right.
Yep.
Gradle on the left, and then Hernandez as a 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then up front, it's the three Bs: Beckford, Becchio, and Bamford. And then Chris Wood as well. Honourable mention for him. I'm going to go for Patrick Bamford. I think that might be quite controversial.
Shut it down. Shut the radios to everybody. We'll just leave the building. Christmas is here. Good. This has been the Leeds United fan show.
We've lost all the listeners anyway.
Everybody's logged off. I can't believe it. Wow. Okay, that is
Why does
quite...
that surprise you? You think I'm quite down on Bamford, but I've always been quite a stan.
Yeah, no, to be fair, you have. I think I'm just going with general consensus, and it's not overriding in favour of Patrick Bamford at all, is it? But, hey, that's why you're here, John, and I can't believe you said that. No, this is fair play, and you're going to give me your reasons behind it. Well, I thought you were going to go Becchio.
I see. Again, Becchio is another player who I'm a little bit low on. Again, because he was quite agricultural, and I think part of the problem really is that, you know, for most of the decade I didn't really enjoy watching us play football, and now I do. And so, when you're choosing a team of the decade, like, what do you go for? Do you go for, again, we've said it already, Do you go for the stats and production, or do you go for what you actually enjoyed? And for me, the last few years have been so much more enjoyable that I've tended in my team to go for players who I enjoyed watching play, not simply from a productive side, but from an aesthetic side as well. And I think Patrick Bamford, I think we'll look back at Patrick Bamford and we'll realise just how... I mean, we do it anyway. You know, he came off against Cardiff, and after we were 3-1 up at that point, and after that point we lost a little bit of control, and, you know, it's little things like that where with players like Bamford, you have to sort of look hard to see what it is that they do. You can't just watch the ball. You have to watch what the team are doing as well. And for me, like, we've not had a striker who's just been as well-rounded as Bamford in the decade, so that's why I've gone with him. Beckford, I would have gone for had he had more time, maybe for Leeds. But then let's not forget that he played a lot of his career for Leeds in League One as well, which I think does have to impact it. And yeah, Chris Wood had a good season. He was very productive, but I just don't like watching Chris Wood play. I think he's, again, another agricultural player. So yeah, that's my team of the decade. Do you want to read it out?
We are going to read it out now. Right, so John McKenzie's Leeds team of the decade, which started on the 1st of January 2010 and ends on the 31st of December 2019, is a 4-1-4-1 formation. In goal, Robert Green. In goal, it is Robert Green. Then we've got Byron, Cooper, White, Taylor, Calvin Phillips, Lewis Cook, Hernandez, Costa, Gradle, and Patrick Bamford.
I'm just worried that, like, there's some obvious player that I've completely forgotten about who should have gone in. But...
Well, hey, listen, I'm sure we will put this out on our Twitter at Love Sport Radio. So if anybody has anything to say about John McKenzie's team of the decade for Leeds United, please do let us know. Or tweet us right now at Love Sport Radio. Right, we are going to move on because Fulham are up next, and we are going to be looking ahead to that game and the rest of the festive fixtures here on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
It's Love Sport Radio, and you're listening to the Leeds United fan show, and I'm sighing because in the ads we are still debating just what constitutes a decade. I can't quite believe it. And to be fair, they've kind of converted me over to the logic that they were given, that if you start a decade on the 10th, which is what it is, the 10, like the rounded 10. So if we're starting on 2020, technically it should finish, I suppose, in 2030. You do raise a valid point, John McKenzie. And we don't know when the world started. And is it even 2020? Who knows what's going on? We don't know. What we do know, however, is that Leeds travel to Craven Cottage tomorrow to place Fulham. Sixth-placed Fulham, of course. Desperate to keep their place in the playoffs and perhaps, potentially, close some ground on the top two, being West Brom and Leeds. On the line to talk about that now is Alan Drewitt Jr. from the Hammy End blog. Hello, Alan.
Hello. How are you?
Good, thank you. Very well. It's great to have you on the line. Thanks for joining us on this Friday evening. Now, Fulham hosting Leeds. Fair to say the Cottagers, great November, a pretty dreadful December, would you say?
Yeah, it's not been great, has it? We've lost our last three games after winning the previous four. We've been quite unlucky with injuries to the centre of our midfield. We've lost Harry Arter, Harrison Reed, and we're playing with Kearney a bit too deep. So, you know, I think we should have one or two of them back tomorrow. So I'm hoping that can make the difference.
There's been a lot of talk about whether or not Scott Parker is a good manager. What is your opinion on this?
That's a good question. I like him. I'm not one for changing managers at the first sign of trouble. I think he's, you know, the last few games have been disappointing. And a few of his substitutions are a bit questionable. But look, he's still learning. We're six. You know, we're in a playoff position as it stands. And we've still not really reached our full potential. So, you know, I want to give him time. And, yeah, I'm fully behind Scott Parker.
In terms of the festive fixture pile-up that is now coming, Alan, it might be a simple question, but how crucial are the next few games for Fulham in terms of those promotion hopes? Like we just said there, you know, dropping down to sixth in the Championship table. It's so tight, as it is every single season, but Millwall recently with a great run. Cardiff just starting to look pretty good under Neil Harris at the moment. All there within a shout. Cardiff just 3 points from within Fulham. So these Christmas fixtures are often so important come the end of the season.
They are. And once we've got Leeds tomorrow, which is a huge game, I think, for both teams. And then we've got quite a nice run of fixtures. We have Luton, Reading, and a few other teams which are lurking around closer to the bottom than they are the top. So if we can pick up a good result tomorrow, then we can, you know, go on a run ourselves and try and close down the big boys at the top.
Does it worry you that you're struggling against top six sides at the moment? Because obviously the last four games that you've had have been against top six sides and you've struggled. Is that a concern for you going forward? Surely you need to be beating some of those sides if you want to be considered potentials for promotion.
Oh, of course. The thing is, if you go back to Preston, for example, that was a scrappy game. Two red cards in the first half, and we probably should have got something out of that. Our noticeable win of the season so far is Swansea away. They seem to have dipped a bit in form as well. But, you know, we've lost to Brentford, and we seem to have played the big boys at the wrong time. And it might sound like it's an excuse, but as I said, our central midfield is pretty much vital to the way we play. And if you lose the likes of your Harry Arters and your Harrison Reed, it's always going to be difficult. But I think a win tomorrow could put can get us back into contention.
How do you think that you're going to line up tomorrow? How do you think the midfield is going to look? Because obviously you've had Josh Onoma playing quite deep and then Kearney just in front of him and then Johansson next to him as well. And I've watched a couple of your games recently and the midfield has looked very static. Very unable to decompress when after they've been in defensive situations. They seem quite slow getting into defensive transition. Is there something that's going to change tomorrow, or do you think that it will be much more of the same?
This is the issue. I think Kearney has been playing too deep alongside Johansson, and Onoma has been playing sort of behind Mitrovic, but nobody knows Anoma's best position yet. Does he play further a bit deeper? Does he play further forward? Nobody knows his exact role. And he's sort of filling in a role which Kearney does really well. And I think, you know, in my opinion, Kearney's probably one of the best number 10s in the league. Definitely one of the best passers of the ball. And he can control the game. But we're sacrificing his quality going forward to try and counteract that with stopping goals going in. But we're not doing either at the minute. So I'm hoping Harrison Reed is back tomorrow. We can push Kearney further forward and, you know, help Mitrovic score the goals which we vitally need at the minute.
Do you think Parker's just sort of, it feels to me like I've watched the last three games and it feels as though he's just tweaking around with the midfield a bit too much. He's thinking that the best way to solve this poor run is to just turn the triangle around in midfield a few times and see what happens.
This is the thing. It does worry me a little bit. When a manager is starting to become under pressure, they start making too many changes.
Yeah.
And I feel he's going down this route. And I think tomorrow will tell us a lot as fans as to whether the players actually want to play for him. Because there has been the odd hearsay saying, you know, he's starting to lose the dressing room. He is making too many changes. Same happened with Jokanović a season before in the Premier League, too many changes. And, you know, I think the first sort of 20, 30 minutes tomorrow, I think you'll see if we do start on the front foot and we do take an early lead, you know, they will show some fight. But I think if, you know, we go back into our shells, lead score early, then it could be a long afternoon for us.
Well, on that note, Alan, it's been great having you on this evening. Thanks so much for coming on this Friday evening. But your prediction ahead of tomorrow's game?
I've always got to be confident at the Cottage. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win.
Ooh, a 2-1 win. Ending that 11-game unbeaten run for Leeds United. Alan Druitt Jr., thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Alan Druitt Jr. from the Hammy End blog. He reckons that Fulham are going to end Leeds' 11-game unbeaten run. Of course, the winning run, I should say, was ended last week against Cardiff. What do you reckon, John?
Oh, it's a horrible fixture, really. I've just done a tactical preview for us today on our Twitter site, and I'm very low on Parker as a manager. I've watched a few of their games. They no one seems to know what they're doing. They don't transition well either direction. They don't make the most of having some of the best players in the league. But they do have some of the best players in the league, and that means that they can sucker punch teams just by relying on having Alexander Mitrovic or Ivan Cavaliero, Tom Kearney, some of the best producers in the league. And that's what worries me, is that, you know, we spent the first 15 minutes talking about what happens when the luck doesn't go your way, and Fulham are definitely a team who can do that. But I think if we can manage the game as we usually do, if we can control the game, if we can prevent them from doing what they do. And what they do is very simple. They try and get the ball wide, try and get the ball into the box from wide areas to Mitrovic. If we can keep the ball and stop them from doing that, and then look to find the space that their fullbacks leave because they have to push up to try and get those wide areas, I think we'll cause them problems. But, you know, I'm not actually looking forward to it that much. I'm a little bit nervous about it.
Okay, well, look. We've got 4.5 minutes, so we cannot end the year without some listener questions, which is exactly what we're going to do. And we're going to move straight into Nat Dufton, of course, who was on the show last week. If Forshaw doesn't recover from his injury for a while, who would you like to see brought in to replace him, either from the under-23s or transferred in?
Oh, you know, I was in such a rush getting everything sorted for tonight that I haven't even really thought about how I'd answer this question. Obviously the natural successor to Forshaw is Jamie Shackleton. I don't think Shackleton is anywhere near the level of Forshaw. I don't think that's a particularly surprising thing to say. I think obviously Adam Forshaw is 27, 28. He's an experienced central midfielder. He's played in the Premier League and was a good player for Middlesbrough in the Premier League when they were there in a team that wasn't very good. So I don't mean to say that pejoratively, but I do think that he'll be the natural successor. And I think that's what will that's what will happen. If things continue, he will be the backup for the Forshaw position, or whatever that position is now. I guess it's now the click position. But who would I like to be brought in? Josh De Silva from Brentford is a fantastic player. Ovi Ejaria is a fantastic player. I would take either of those two. No problems asked. We could go even higher, couldn't we? Like, can I just pick anyone?
Who do you want, mate?
I don't know, maybe Pogba would probably be quite good in that position.
Yeah, he may well go, although who knows after what Raiola said today about him wanting to win trophies at Manchester United. Interesting that, after he might be on for a £12 million commission should they sign Erling Haaland. But this is the Leeds United Fan Show. Let's not focus on that silliness. We're going to move on to questions from Marcus Stanway now. If he scores on Saturday, it will be 10 goals in 23 games. Do the stats suggest, and you might be inclined to suggest they do after he was voted in John McKenzie's team of the decade, that Patrick Bamford is on for 20 plus goals this season?
Well, I think we said it early on in the season, didn't we? Was it was either me or it was Josh we've both been quite hot on Bamford, and yeah, I think he will if he keeps on going. So yeah, 10 goals in 23 games means double that, and you end up with 20. So yeah, why not? Let's go with that.
Quick math, mate. I told you. See, I knew you were a Cambridge graduate.
It
for
just
a reason.
Depends on which decade he'll do it in, man. And we none of us know.
Right, rattling through. Christopher Rutherford. Will Leeds go off the boil like they did last season after starting so well in the first half of the season?
No, I don't think they will. I don't think they went off the boil. I think they panicked a little bit. So let's say that. I think they'll be fine. I think there's two differences. One is we've had another season with Bielsa. Players understand the system more, and the players are fitter. And then the other thing is that this league is different to last season. The teams outside the top two are just beating each other in a fairly round robin way, and it's working out quite nicely for us. So I mean, we're 10 points after a disappointing result, clear of third. So I think everything should be fine, and I'm hoping that that buffer stays, because I think should that buffer be reduced, and you could be in that position again. But I think we're doing enough to make sure that buffer stays quite comfortable.
Okay, and to finish, not just the listener questions, but the show for 2019. This is from Batshoot, James Milner, basically. Would he come back, and would he add to us as a team? Bear in mind, he's just signed a new contract at Liverpool.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Like, where would he fit into the Bielsa side? I mean, he fits everywhere in Liverpool. So I guess he would, knowing Bielsa, he'd probably play as a left-back. But if not, yeah, maybe back up to Calvin Phillips.
Lovely stuff. Well, John, it's been nothing but a pleasure being with you here for the past few months or so, as we have reached the end of 2019. This has been the Leeds United Fan Show. You'll be back in 2020.
We'll
be back in 2020. We'll leave you then, but we're going to finish on what can only be a high. We'll see you next year.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.